Ani, and welcome to Bomb Sita, an Aboriginal news magazine program that features news, current affairs, a focus on community and culture, spotlights on entertainment and great tunes, and every flavor from Aboriginal artists. I'm your host, Jennifer Ashwasage. Assembly First Nations National Chief Sean Atleo gave an AFN update on water and education issues and a couple of stories on diabetes. In northwestern Ontario, the Anishinaabe Nation, along with its partners, are delivering organic meat and fresh food to its most northern communities. Plus, researchers in the James Bay area are studying the combination of traditional medicine and science in the fight against type 2 diabetes in Cree territory. The Carrier-Sicani Tribal Council have vowed not to move in their opposition to the Enbridge Northern Gateway Pipeline project. These stories plus great tunes all coming your way right after the news. Here's your national Aboriginal news. The Assembly of First Nations is continuing its work on its education initiative for grades kindergarten to 12. Atleo says those grades are being focused on right now because they're embedded in the Indian Act. The initiative will be overseen by a panel of experts appointed by both the AFN and the federal government. He says the idea is not to do another study. The Chiefs Committee on Education is also directly involved with the initiative. Atleo says there will be dialogue sessions across the country with results going into a report, and it's hoped discussions will start this spring. Meanwhile, the Assembly of First Nations has taken a position against Bill S-1. That's the First Nations water bill currently before the Senate. National Chief Sean Atleo says the bill doesn't work in its current state.
The bill will not ensure people have safe drinking water, and that it does not respect our rights or the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. And it's very much, in my view, why S-11 in its current form likely fails in the very purpose that it states that it will respond to. We told the committee we need action now. We told them about the 49 communities with high-risk drinking water systems. We told them the 116 communities that are operating under drinking water advisories right now and feel strongly that S-11 really does do anything to fix the current situation.
Atleo says the AFN will be recommending to the Standing Committee on Aboriginal Affairs that Bill S-11 will be addressed with appropriate resources. Atleo adds facilities on reserve need to be addressed, and he says they won't allow the federal government to impose legislation that First Nations can't keep up with. A North Vancouver-based First Nation is getting into the wind energy market. The Silvertooth Nation, formerly the Burrard Band, has partnered up with Endurance Wind Power. The Vancouver Sun reports they want to market wind turbines to Aboriginal communities across Canada. The First Nation has contributed $2 million in equity to the Endurance Wind Power. Silvertooth was one of the four host First Nations of the Vancouver 2010 Olympics. The community created a TWN wind power under its umbrella, which will distribute Endurance's community-based wind turbines in Aboriginal markets. They will be marketing to Aboriginal communities that heavily rely on running diesel to power up their communities. The Lekapamuk Nation Tribal Council has won its appeal. The First Nation won its case in the BC Court of Appeal. The court has declared that a key part of the approval process for extending the life of a landfill near the community was defective because the community was not consulted. The project involved extending an existing land site near Cache Creek. In a release, Oregon Jack Creek Indian Band Chief Pasco said he was pleased with the court's ruling. He said the nation is hopeful that in the face of uncertainty for the landfill, that the province will come to the table and engage in meaningful consultation with them. Also in BC, Lekapamuk Nation and its affiliates have made submissions to the Supreme Court. The Lekapamuk Nation Tribal Council, Okanagan Nation, and Upper Nicola Indian Band are challenging the province's approval of transmission projects. The project is proposed to go through the Lower Mainland. According to a statement from the Lekapamuk Nation, the Interior to Lower Mainland Transmission Project is the biggest transmission line project in over three decades. It's estimated to cost about $600 million. The province had promised to consult the nation back in 2009 regarding impacts to traditional territories. Union of BC Indian Chiefs Grand Chief Stuart Phillips says they've been to court three times to hold the province to its legal duties to consult. Community members in northwestern Ontario First Nations will be eating fresh food for the next several months. The Anishinaabe Aski Nation has teamed up with several companies to deliver fresh food to the Nan communities. Nan Grand Chief Stan Beardy says the Good Food Pot Project will help address health issues in some of the communities.
What we've done is that to begin to address the high rates of diabetes, hypertension, and other related, diet-related illnesses, we've looked at ways to try to provide nutritious, healthy foods to our population. So on experimental trial basis, pilot, we've set up a partnership where we ship up healthy foods to 12 of our communities.
NAN partnered up with Quality Market, True North Community Cooperative, and Wasaya Airways. Beardy says they're considering long-term healthy food projects, which may include establishing greenhouses in northern communities. Elsewhere in the James Bay area, where diabetes is also an issue, there has been a research project ongoing since 2003. The research project is looking into the combination of traditional and Western medicine to fight diabetes. Dr. Pierre Haddad is the director of the Canadian Institute of Health Research Team in Aboriginal Anti-Diabetic Medicines. He says there's a clinical study happening right now where patients are being monitored while taking traditional herbs as well as Western medicines. Haddad says they're keeping an eye on how the two interact.
We've identified a large number of plants and studied about 17 of them in great detail over the past 8 years. And there are clinical studies going on right now in the community of Mistissini, the Cree Nation of Mistissini, just north of Chibougamau in Quebec. I don't have the results yet, but the anecdotes that we, or the feedback from some of the participants has been very good. On the laboratory side, we've accumulated a lot of evidence, both in petri dishes with different types of cells that either produce or respond to insulin, which is a key hormone in controlling blood sugar. We've also looked at interactions between the medicinal plants and enzymes that normally break down drugs. So that could be one way that there could be some interaction. So there's a lot of concern about interactions between the traditional medicines and the drugs that the people are given, both from the traditional healers as well as the clinicians and the team.
Haddad says the findings have already been published in several journals and have also been translated into Cree. The Carrier-Sicani Tribal Council is firm in its stance against the Enbridge Northern Gateway Pipeline project. The $5.5 billion project would see over 1,000 kilometers of pipeline built from just northeast of Edmonton to Kitimat, crossing over the traditional territories of about 40 bands. Terry Teagee is the vice tribal chief of the Carrier-Sicani Tribal Council. He says the First Nation communities are worried about the environment, and Teagee says Enbridge has a history of breached pipelines. Teagee says they will not accept anything from Enbridge.
We won't accept any benefits package. My people have told me that it's not worth it. Plus, all the other concerns in regards to the environmental assessment is just really that our people have stated no to this project for 5 years, and we continue to say no.
Teagee says an environmental assessment is still in preliminary stages. Teagee adds Enbridge has not held discussions with Carrier-Sicani Tribal Council communities. He says they don't want to negatively affect other First Nation communities.
Our continued opposition is that our people don't want to be a party to a project that has potential detrimental effects to our neighboring communities, such as the coastal First Nations, as well as the Alberta oil sands area and the Cree people, the Athabaskan Cree, as well as the other Cree people around there that are affected by the detrimental effects of the oil sands. We don't want to be a party to that, so that's just even more reasons why we say no to this project.
Teagee adds he doesn't think their opposition to the project will ever change. Officials with the Enbridge Northern Gateway Pipeline Project were unavailable for comment. The art of Wiwemakong artist Daphne Ojig will be featured on 3 Canadian stamps. These stamps will feature 3 of Ojig's pieces, including works such as Spiritual Renewal, Powwow Dancer, and Powwow. Canada Post says it's proud to add the work of Ojig to the Art Canada series. Ojig will also be present for the unveiling of the stamps in Kelowna on February 26th. And that's your National Aboriginal News.
Train, take me anywhere from here. I don't care how far I go. Now I'm leaving with the sunshine on my face, and I'm never looking back because I'm. Never be back again. Forever facing forward, I'm running away on a freight train.
Don Amaro with Freight Train from his album Change Your Life. Diabetes has reached epidemic proportions in First Nation communities in northwestern Ontario. That's according to Anishinaabe Nation Grand Chief Stan Beardy. And that's why, he says, NAN has teamed up with several other partners to deliver fresh food to some communities. Now here's Grand Chief Stan Beardy.
What we're doing is that with Anishinaabe, we're located the furthest north in Ontario, and we have a very high cost of fresh, healthy foods. So what we've done is that to begin to address the high rates of diabetes, hypertension, and other related diet-related illnesses, we look at ways to try to provide nutritious, healthy foods to our population. So on experimental trial basis, pilot, we've set up a partnership where we ship up healthy foods to 12 of our communities.
Okay, and who are you partnering up with, and how did you arrive at those partnerships?
We've been in discussions for about 2 years now, talking about possibilities, what is the best way to access organic beef, for example, and vegetables that are locally grown, let's say, for example, in Thunder Bay. So we had discussions with the beef groups, local farmers, but also a number of retail outlets who would want to work with us to distribute, help distribute some of the food to our communities, as well as our discussion with trucking firms and also online. So at the end, we are partnering up with a local outlet called Quality Market. We are partnering up with a Chonar Community Cooperative and Wasia Airlines to distribute food to 12 Nyan communities.
And you were also saying that the project is on a trial basis, and so how long is that trial going to be?
Well, I think what we're looking at is a one-time, one time, we're looking at right now from February to for the month of February. We'll see how it goes, and if it's fairly successful, if it's something that the communities, for example, are responding positively to, we will find ways to try and continue to the concept.
Okay, and I know this is a little bit off topic, but how about establishing greenhouses in some of those communities?
The long term, that's what we're looking at. As I mentioned, diabetes is an epidemic proportions. And I think that's directly related to that diet or what the local people on fixed incomes, for example, are able to access. So to begin to address wellness and healthy individuals in the remote communities, we have to look at all the possibilities, including greenhouses and also gardening programs.
Okay, and I think that's everything for me. Is there anything else you'd like to say or add about the project?
Yeah, I think it's so essential that the people in the far north, in Ontario, have a means to access healthy foods like everybody else. And I think on the long term, if we're looking at farming, if we're looking at greenhouses, if we're looking at subsidized basic essential foods, that is something that I believe that the governments need to respond to work with us.
That was Anishinaabe Nation Grand Chief Stan Beardy. Sean Atleo, National Chief of the Assembly of First Nations, recently held a tele-press conference to update Indigenous media on AFN activities. For instance, the National Chief gave an update on education initiatives, plus what the AFN's position on Bill S-11, the First Nations Water Bill, currently being heard in the Senate. So here's some tape from that press conference.
I guess just by way of some opening thoughts, reflecting back, I guess, our special chief assembly last December, a key priority continues to be education, and especially supporting the students and our youth. I think back to the assembly and the moment, particularly when the youth, their participation and voice, it really stood out for all of us, and myself included. They spoke very strongly, very passionately about education. They spoke passionately as well about identity, about our languages, our cultures, and our values. And this continues the ongoing call to action on education that has been really a focus for the Assembly of First Nations, and the federal government has responded. We're working with the federal government on a joint initiative on K-12. It should be noted that K-12 is of particular interest for a wide variety of reasons, including the fact that it's an aspect of education particularly still very much embedded in the Indian Act. So this effort to engage First Nations on our K-12 will be overseen by a panel of experts that will be jointly appointed by the Assembly and by the federal government. And I think it's really important to stress that this isn't about doing the idea is not to do another study, but to build on the concrete plans and proposals for progress that First Nations have really been advancing since the advent of First Nations control and First Nations education since the 1970s. What this panel is all about is in a time-limited fashion, a very focused mandate to identify, explore, and bring forward clear options to advance and to implement First Nations education systems and supports that are required. It's very much a joint initiative, and as an opportunity, is really about moving beyond the status quo, which I think is very clear to everyone that it's completely unacceptable. Also, I want to emphasize that the chiefs will have a very central role in this process. Our Chiefs Committee on Education is directly involved in the work, as well as the terms of reference. As I mentioned, the panel that will be jointly established, that the three members of the panel will be announced in the very near future. The results of the dialogue sessions, there's expected to be dialogue sessions across the country, as well as one national session. These sessions will result in a joint report to both the Assembly of First Nations and the federal government. And we have the opportunity to then put this before the Chiefs in Assembly at our AGM in Moncton this coming summer. And we're hoping to start these regional discussions coming up in April and go on until sometime in mid-June. And this will give us the opportunity to review the outcomes in advance of the AGA to talk about the results and the recommendations and the next steps. I wanted to also mention something that we found very important was we're also doing some targeted work on post-secondary education. On January 27th, we convened an online virtual summit on post-secondary education. And this was really about opening national dialogue with students. And I was very happy with the participation, but not surprised, I guess, in some sense, that the response was quite overwhelming. We had more than 1,500 students and youth. We also had 20 post-secondary institutions join the discussion. And to me, this is a real crystal clear indication that post-secondary education really matters to our people, especially to our young people. And so we're planning to keep working in engaging the student population by having more virtual summits. The next one will be hosted by the First Nation University of Canada. And we're also going to be having one for our French-speaking students that will be hosted by Laval, by Université Laval. And so these sessions and the resulting reports, we'll keep bringing those forward. Continuing on education, Regional Chief Angus Toulouse, our National Executive Member who has leadership portfolio responsibilities on education, he and I will be joining the First Nations education, actually the Council of Ministers of Education, from across the country. We'll be meeting tomorrow in Toronto, and we'll be gathered there to keep pressing for leadership to happen at all levels of jurisdiction and for real progress on education. Just quickly, a couple of things. I wanted to mention that we're having a planning and dialogue forum in Vancouver on March 7th and 8th, and the theme of this forum is strengthening our nation, advancing capacity for First Nations governments and economies. And this forum will really build on the forum that we held in November in Montreal, which was aimed at strengthening our governments and empowering our people and displacing the harmful aspects of the Indian Act. So this is really about nation building and rebuilding. And lastly, I think just to quickly comment on something that is so critical, and that is access to clean drinking water, First Nations drinking water. And specifically, I wanted to quickly mention Bill S-11. It's a federal legislation. It's called Safe Drinking Water for First Nations Act. And clearly, the issue of safe drinking water is an absolute critical area, very key. We all support it, the need for safe drinking water. But also, we feel that S-11, unfortunately, in its current form, is not going to help us to achieve this goal. I expressed this at the Standing Senate Committee on Aboriginal Peoples February 8th, telling them that the bill will not ensure our people have safe drinking water and that it does not respect our rights or the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. And it's very much, in my view, why S-11 in its current form likely fails in the very purpose that it states that it will respond to. We told the city we need action now. We told them about the 49 communities with high-risk drinking water systems. We told them of the 116 communities that are operating under drinking water advisories right now and feel strongly that S-11 really doesn't do anything to fix the current situation. Instead, what's right now, the problems with Meds 11, we're suggesting be addressed with the appropriate resources. You need to address the facilities as well as the skills. And under the current S11, our people could be punished for not meeting the new regulations that they would otherwise have no ability to meet. And so there is no guarantee that this bill will support First Nations to have access to safe drinking water. And we're not going to allow the government to impose laws or policies that intrude on our rights, for sure. So I wanted to just mention Bill S11, Don, and just by way of, I guess, an opening comment, I'll leave it there. We'll turn it over to questions now. I'm going to go in order of the times that people joined the call, but we'll, like I say, we'll make sure you all get one question.
Hi, National Chief.
Hi.
What specific changes do you see in post-secondary funding? You didn't mention that, like how it will be administered, and also if there's a timeline attached to that.
You know, we haven't had anyone talk to us from the federal government about post-secondary. I think we're no different than everyone else in terms of we just periodically hear rumors that, you know, the government's bringing about changes. And I think what's very clear is that with education more broadly, as it states in the declaration, we must be involved.
Yes.
So while we're pleased, you know, to be engaged on the K-12, it must remain meaningful, and with post-secondary, it is really along the same vein. So there is no time frame, there is no initiative in terms of addressing post-secondary. There still remains, I think, a tremendous amount of work to do. Bring this message out to the general public. I spoke at a major gathering with close to 6,000 people in Waterloo, explaining to them that, you know, our graduation rates at K-12 remain hovering just below 50%, and that something like 4% of our population has post-secondary education compared to over 25% in the mainstream. And that gap just keeps growing, and we're gonna lose generations. And in my view, the most powerful voice is the voice of the students, who are predominantly youth. They're not all youth. There are mature learners in the post-secondary system. But I believe that the voice of youth and the students to really make sure that post-secondary education is not only protected but is further supported is going to remain very crucial. So in many respects, it's about maintaining what's there now and building on that and growing it to make sure that all have access to post-secondary, because that's currently not what happened. We've been under that 2% cap.
Cap, yeah.
And
okay,
so
thank
we
you.
Will remain focused on making sure that the resources are there. So I hope that clarifies it, because there is no specific initiative except that we need to, this is part of the broad call to action on education to support all our learners.
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
That was John Atleo, National Chief of the Assembly of First Nations, speaking at a teleconference with Indigenous media.
She gets up from the table, the coffee's growing cold. She thinks of how the years fly by, seems she's growing old. She glances in the mirror, touches up her lines, but still it shows through all that work of putting in her time. And she wishes there were someone there to hold her at the end of the day. Sitting in an office a million miles from home, a boy is working hard at what he does there alone. And he thinks about his baby and the girl who makes him smile. He thinks about the time he'll go back, she said the time would fly. And he wishes there were some way he could hold them at the end of the day. And sometimes the road is easy and sometimes it's far too long. The seventh flight in the last 5 days, two more and I'll be home. For the gentle down and the love flows with ease, and the time that I'll be in your arms again at the
Coming home from school, opening the door, his little boy voice echoes through the emptiness in store. The bully really got him, this time he's feeling bad. No one's there to wipe away the tears or take his hand. And he wishes there were someone there to hold him at the end of the day. And sometimes the road is easy and sometimes it's far too long. The seventh fight in the last 5 days, tomorrow I'll be home. And I live for the gentle town where the love flows with ease. And the time that I'll be in your arms again at the end of the day. Old woman in the old folks' home, praying fervently to keep her children safe and light her way through misery. She misses God so badly, thinks about their years, and all she wants is to go home and have him wipe her tears. She would hold him so close to her. They will walk in sunset once again at the end of the day. And sometimes the road is easy and sometimes it's far too long. Seventh flight in the last 5 days, tomorrow I'll be home. And I live for the gentle town where love flows with ease. And the time that I'll be in your arms again. Yeah, the time that I'll be in your arms again. Yeah, the time that I'll be in your arms again. At the end of the day.
That was End of the Day from Lila Gilday. Researchers have been studying the combination of using traditional and Western medicine to combat type 2 diabetes among the James Bay Cree. The collaborative efforts for the study began in 2003 and it's about to wrap up. Dr. Pierre Haddad is the director of the Canadian Institute of the Health Research Team in Aboriginal Anti-Diabetic Medicines, and he tells us about the project.
It's about a project that has been going on since 2003 gathers three universities, University of Montreal, McGill University, and University of Ottawa, in collaboration with the Cree nations of AUSG, that's the Eastern James Bay Cree in northern Quebec. The project is centered about building the scientific evidence base for the medicinal plants used by the Cree from their traditional medicine to target symptoms of diabetes. And this was to raise the or to enable the use of these medicines for Cree diabetics to manage the disease and be a culturally better adapted alternative, if you want.
And how is that that research going over the past 8 years?
The research has been steadily progressing. I would say that we had to do a lot of relationship building in the first few years, and of course, gain the trust and respect, and develop a mutual interest actually in each other's science. Personally, I've evolved a lot from, coming more from an angle of, Western scientist coming to validate, quote unquote, traditional medicine, to see myself more now as a role as a knowledge translator, translating the traditional knowledge into a scientific language that the health authorities can appreciate and then recognize the value and usefulness of the Cree medicines, and therefore enable their use in the context of the clinics.
And not an easy journey, I'm sure. And so what have you found so far with respect to combined traditional medicines with modern science for type 2 diabetes?
We've identified a large number of plants and studied about 17 of them in great detail over the past 8 years. And there are clinical studies going on right now in the community of Mistissini, the Cree Nation of Mistissini, just north of Chibougamau in Quebec. I don't have the results yet, but the anecdotes that we, or the feedback from some of the participants has been very good. On the laboratory side, we've accumulated a lot of evidence, both in petri dishes with different types of cells that either produce or respond to insulin, which is a key hormone in controlling blood sugar. We've also looked at interactions between the medicinal plants and enzymes that normally break down drugs. So that could be one way that there could be some interaction. So there's a lot of concern about interactions between the traditional medicines and the drugs that the people are given, both from the traditional healers as well as the clinicians and the team. So we've made quite a strong progress, and I know that there's a few of these plants being actively taken by Cree diabetics, and the study that we have underway is an observational type study, so we don't intervene. We just the Cree diabetics are being followed both simultaneously by a Cree healer who advises them on how to prepare and use the traditional medicine, and they're being followed also by the Mississippi clinic by the doctors and nurses there, and they take blood samples and make sure to pay close attention also to any signs of toxicity. But thus far, results are very encouraging, although, again, I don't have the final result.
Well, that sounds like a very fascinating study and one that could really help communities. How long has the clinical study been going on?
The clinical study started in the summer of 2009, so it's been going on for a year and a half now. But, you have to, the study protocol was to follow people for a period of 3 months with a possible extension of another 3 months. But it's a continuous recruitment, so people are encouraged to come into the study, and that's why it drags on over a long period of time, because the first people started coming onto the project in the summer of 2009, but there are other people who just came into the project before this last Christmas. So at some point we will stop and analyze the data that we have to date to sort of organize this, but the Cree Health Board, who is also partnering in this clinical study, is using this as a pilot study also to, if you want, determine the functioning, if you want, on how to work, how to make the clinics work with the Cree healers. And because of the great interest that this study has generated, they don't want to end it. So it will now we've stopped the funding, unfortunately stops March 31st, but they will continue funding the study themselves.
Okay, and at the end, what's going to happen with your findings?
The findings have already been published, and we've have over 20 publications, mostly from the laboratory side, but also from what's called the ethnobotanical study, which was the survey of the traditional knowledge for the different symptoms of diabetes. And we also make lay language summaries, which are translated into the two dialects of Cree, and have these updates, these scientific updates, prepared in a nice booklet for the communities every 6 months. So we've had like six or eight of them in the last 4 to 5 years, which brings back the information to the communities. And we have every 6 months also face-to-face meetings with representatives and healers of the participating communities. There are four out of the nine communities And I think two more have joined in the last month or two. So actually a lot of that's the whole aim is to be able to make this the results of the study available first and foremost to the Cree communities themselves, obviously, but to also publish this in the scientific literature to again build the evidence base for the soundness, if you want, of the Cree traditional medicine.
That was Dr. Peter Haddad, the director of the Canadian Institute of the Health Research Team in Aboriginal Anti-Diabetic Medicines. Now here's Digging Roots with Let the Sun.
Insurgency rises, planted from seeds. Beautiful babies, my fruitful lover. Our roots still grow through the concrete of the times. Never underestimate the power in numbers. Oh yes, we grow. Rain feeds our souls. We'll let the sun shine in. We'll let the sun shine in. Chanting it out, my uprising girl. She let the sun shine in. She let the sun shine in. In the truth, pass all roots to the youth. They aim for the sky till they soar. The world is not to fear. We speak and we hear. Warriors rise, the changes now. Oh yes, we grow. Rain feeds our souls. But let the sun shine in. Let the sun shine in. People rise up, say enough is enough. We let the sun shine in. Let the sun shine in. Era where the body and mind are subjected to one-sided propaganda. Poison narratives that are rotten to the root. Couple of contrasts compared to the truth. We're not sheep on the hillside grazing. I choose to live up and ride the occasion. Ignore the ones trying to edge on a fight. Not truth is our blind and our vision is sight. The world's the best, so wake yourself up. But sleeping people is the people who's caught in the jaws of fixed social cultural crux. Backwards thinking is a waste of thought. Only way us break out of the box or buckets or crabs. It's a lie that's thought. There's only connection with speculation. When truth is our blind and our vision is sight. Oh yes, we grow. Rain feeds our souls, but let the sun shine. Let the sun shine in. People rise up, say enough is enough. Let the sun shine in. Let the sun shine in. Let the sun shine in.
The Carrier-Sican Tribal Council is firm in its stance against the Enbridge Northern Gateway Pipeline project. The $5.5 billion project would see about 1,172 kilometers of pipeline built from just northeast of Edmonton to Kitimat, crossing over the traditional territories of about 40 bands. The company, most recently, offered a compensation package which includes a 10% equity stake in the profits of the project, as well as a good percentage of jobs and other perks. And all that doesn't matter to First Nations with the Carrier-Sicani Tribal Council, because Vice Tribal Chief Terry Teagee says it's the environment that matters. Now here's Terry Teagee explaining.
Yeah, essentially our opposition is, in terms of this project, is just that we, our people, don't support this project, concerned with the risks to the project and the fact that Enbridge has a history of breached pipelines. So that is our opposition to this project.
And so the company's been offering a compensation package which includes a 10% equity in the project. And what's your position on that?
We won't accept any benefits package. My people have told me that it's not worth it. Plus, all the other concerns in regards to the environmental assessment is just really that our people have stated no to this project for 5 years, and we continue to say no.
Has an environmental assessment been complete?
Currently, they're in preliminary hearings. However, I think there is about another 18 months to 2 years, and with more hearings to come, so it's really in its early stages.
And has Enbridge been trying to negotiate with you?
No, they haven't approached any of the carriers of candy, the tribal council. But however, I know they have approached other First Nations, and no, not directly.
Okay, I just see in some media reports that company spokesperson are saying that their package is being well received.
It may be well received with other First Nations outside of BC, but as far as I know, my communities and the coastal First Nations and the Wet'suwet'en and have continued to say no to this project.
Okay, and it also seems that opposition is really growing, especially with environmental groups along with First Nations. And have you been speaking with those other groups?
We have spoken to some of the groups who've provided some research in regards to pipelines, such as the Pembina Institute, as well as the Rainforest Action Network and Indigenous Environmental Networks. You know, we've all crossed paths and shared some information. Yeah, so we have met with some of them.
And do you think that there's anything that would change your position?
No, I don't think our position will ever change. It's been 5 years, and no matter what equity package or benefits package that they are offering, our people are just too concerned with the environment, especially in light of the Kalamazoo spill and the spill in the Gulf of Mexico, as well as the Exxon Valdez spill. You know, they still haven't really cleaned all of that up yet, and it's been 20 years.
Hmm. And so there's about, you said, 18 months left for to complete the environmental assessment. And what are your next steps in your opposition to the project?
We will continue to state our position in regards to this project. We have not participated in the joint review panel, specifically because we have issues with the current environmental assessment process. The issues we have with the environmental assessment process is that it doesn't take into account that there'd be at least a 30% increase in oil sands development, as well as increased tanker traffic in the coastal waters. So really the scope is limited, as well as has the inability to address accumulative impacts within our territories, as well as the addressing our rights and title issue.
Okay, and I think that's everything from me, Terry. Is there anything else you'd like to say or add?
Yeah, that's just our continued opposition is that our people don't want to be a party to a project that has potential detrimental effects to our neighboring communities, such as the coastal First Nations, as well as the Alberta oil sands area and the Cree people, the Athabascan Cree, as well as the other Cree people around there that are affected by the detrimental effects of the oil sands. We don't want to be a party to that, so that's just even more reasons why we say no to this project.
That was Terry Teagee, Vice Tribal Chief with the Carrier-Sicani Tribal Council. Officials with Enbridge Northern Gateway have been unavailable for comment. You've been listening to Bomb Siddaw with Jennifer Ashwasagay. Bomb Siddaw is an Aboriginal news magazine program which includes current affairs, arts and entertainment in a cross-genre of music from Aboriginal artists. Bomb Siddaw means walking together in the Anishinaabe language. Music for the program is courtesy of Burnt Project One. If you have comments or story ideas, visit the website at bombsedaw.com. That's B-A-M-O-S-E-D-A. And thanks for listening to Bomb Siddaw.